Hello, my name is Brent Dundor. I'm a full-time commercial photographer, artist, and activist, and the proud producer of the They Them Project. They Them Project interviews non-binary individuals, offering a platform for them to be seen and heard while informing and educating everyone on how words and actions affect the trans plus community. Today, I'm honored to have a very special guest for the They Them Project podcast, Councilmember Philippe Cunningham, who is the 4th Ward City Council member representing Minneapolis's most diverse community, North Minneapolis. Philippe was elected in 2017 after unseating a 20-year incumbent council president, and he's also the first transgender man of color ever elected to office in the United States. Philippe, thank you so much for giving me your time today. My name is Brent Dundor. I use he, him, his pronouns.
Thank you for having me today. I greatly appreciate it. My name is Philippe, and I use he, him pronouns as well.
Okay. Before jumping into the questions I have for you, I now like to start each interview explaining that I started this project to challenge my own ignorance and educate myself on gender. So today, I feel the need to also mention that my goal with this particular interview is entirely to understand your own discovery and journey with your gender. So I apologize if you came here excited to answer all sorts of political questions. You probably get enough of that already.
it's quite my jam. So, and I'm happy to tell my story so folks are able to perhaps see themselves reflected in conversation elsewhere.
So. For those who weren't able to make it to the opening gallery for the They Them Project that happened at Lush about 2 months ago, it really was a very special night. We packed the space and we had over 18 organizations tabling, and we raised awareness and we gathered donations for two trans-specific organizations, Trans Health Coalition and Transforming Families. Along with the project covering the walls and many of the project's participants being in attendance, I could tell many people came to hear our guest speaker for the evening, who just so happens to be you, Philippe. Thank you for coming that night.
Of course. I was so honored to be there. And my husband and I were both there. And when we walked through the door, we were just like stunned by how packed that space was. Like, it was hard to get from one side of the room to the other. Uh-huh. So it was really fantastic to see so many folks turn out for that event. So
thank you for being there. Again, I know that it was a highlight of the night. People were continuously saying how amazing all of that was. Yeah. And can you mention a little bit more about what that night was like for you?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I think that I had not been totally prepared for was the emotional release that I would feel, I guess, with being in that space. Because as I had mentioned there, that I have made the choice as I have stepped into onto the life path that I have decided to take, that I had to simplify my gender identity for mass consumption. So it's easiest to say, quote unquote, easiest to say that I'm black queer trans man. Like, that's just easy, straightforward. And then it was like, as I was prepping to walk up and talk, I just had this moment where I was like, oh, I can actually like say my full gender identity in this space and people will understand that. And so for me to be able to stand up in front of a very packed room of folks and be able to say, well, actually identify as a black, queer, trans masculine, gender nonconforming femme, people are like, how about it? And I'm like, but if I was to say that anywhere else, people would look at me probably like, I'm just gonna leave that alone and just not understand it. So it was really great to be able to have that space as well. So that's personally, but then, you know, on a larger scale, it was just amazing to see not only gender, but also how race played into that, because it's also a very diverse set of folks who have been participating in this project. And so it adds that layer of intersectionality. So to be there in that nuanced space like that, it was just kind of like, thanks, y'all. Thanks for putting this together.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted it to be. I had a whole section where I was going to paraphrase what you had said, that you said it yourself perfectly. So, all right. So I do want to mention that that night meant a lot to me as well. I was telling people prior to that evening that I really didn't care if people came up to me and said that they thought the photos were pretty. I just wanted to see people walking around with smiles, feeling free. And I think that's kind of exactly what you were just reiterating. I wanted to see families and I wanted to see youth and for everyone to see what the space looked like, what a space looked like where everyone was fully accepted for who and whatever they are.
Yeah.
There were instances where individuals came up to me to thank me for my work with the project. But from my perspective, it's simple what I'm doing. I'm actually just giving people a place to have their voice heard. And I say that because I would assume that you get to have that feeling of people appreciating your work regularly, not just with trans and non-binary people, but also all minority groups and beyond. What does that feel like to know every day you're making a difference that can actually affect people's lives?
Well, I do appreciate when the hard work that I do is reflected back as being seen as such. You know, you're working hard, I see it, you're making progress, you know, from constituents. But I would say that overall, it's the thing that gets me out of bed every single morning is knowing that I'm actually, while I'm not the, you know, I'm not like some super powerful person, I am able to access power in a way that a rare few amount of people are able to. And I really do come at this work from such a space of justice and fairness and commitment and commitment to equity, that when I'm in City Hall, you know, that's not necessarily when I'm getting it reflected back at me, all the hard work that I'm doing. In fact, I'm like in the trudge, like in the middle of watching systemic oppression perpetuating itself in the various ways that it does. And so being able to do the work, make the progress little by little, you know, we're 5 months in, but little by little seeing changes starting to happen, it feels really great. And I do have community office hours. I'm out in the community for about at least six hours a week, available to community to be able to come just meet with me and talk to me. And I do frequently get folks who thank me for being so available and accessible and engaged. Like people are just like, I just can't believe you're just like literally sitting here and we can just come talk to you. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I said I was going to do. And so folks have been very appreciative of that of that aspect of it. But overall though, it's the seeing the work interrupting the systemic oppression in motion, you know, is I think what helped me do the backflip out of the morning every morning, like ready to go back to City Hall. But I'm really, really grateful for constituents taking the time though to give me positive feedback.
I think I've seen through Facebook, do you call it Coffee with Cunningham or something?
Coffee with Council Member Cunningham.
Okay. So that was my intro, kind of connecting the project and how you have been involved in the past. If you're ready, we'll just start with like the regular questions. And again, if you have any comments in between it all, then please just, we'll make this more of a conversation.
Yeah.
All right. Would there ever be a time that you would be upset if someone asked you what pronouns you use?
No, I really actually appreciate when people ask me what pronouns I use, because that shows me that that person's being intentional about respecting my gender identity. One of the things that I really appreciate is that my policy associate in my office, he actually uses they pronouns with everyone unless he knows for sure what gender identity or pronoun that person uses. And so and I just like every time that happens, I always just feel like this like little spark of gratitude, because it's showing intentionality, it's showing respect, and to me it's just like I'm taking time to see you and say like, I want to respect you. How would you like for me to best do so?
How much responsibility do you think should be put on others to ask people's pronouns or for you? Or
I would say that it is the responsibility of cisgender folks and trans folks who identify on the binary to understand why gender neutral pronouns matter and why they should be respected. I have heard in some trans binary spaces where folks do not hold respect for non-binary folks and non-binary folks' pronouns. And so it's not just cis folks who need to be more intentional about understanding pronouns and being respectful of pronouns. I think it's a both and. I think that it's the responsibility of folks to better understand pronouns and get comfortable with saying they and them. I think that that's the biggest part, is just getting comfortable with doing it. I find myself constantly correcting people, like they, you know, like that's what those people do, like they. And so I think it's just like a matter of getting used to it. And I think that also as gender nonconforming folks, like myself, identified, although my gender pronouns sometimes, I primarily use he, him, but you know, I think that there is, it's also helpful to name that in spaces. So, you know, like naming that in introductions, because that helps me to be able to correct people, you know, like, so if somebody says like, hey, my name is Tina and I go by they, them, then for the rest of the meeting, I know that I get to correct people, you know, like I'm happy to do so. And then, you know, if there's like name tags, like writing they, them on it, so we can see each other, that it helps me be more defensive, you know, like, and protective of that person as well. So I would say for the most part, by identifying like someone who uses they, them pronouns, that like, that's actually like the end of their responsibility. Like and that's why, you know, I say like, it's easier for me to be able to kind of like be on the defense, is because like, I want to make sure that like, they don't have to constantly correct people. Right. Like that's emotional labor that I would like to take off of somebody's shoulders, as much as possible. And I know that I'm not the only person in spaces who feel that way. Yeah. So I just wanted to name that particular component of it.
No, I appreciate it, because people from the project, there are people who say, well, it is my responsibility to bring that up. There's people in the project that say it's not their responsibility, but for the people that say it is my responsibility, they understand that once they claim that, then it's other people's responsibility.
Yeah, right. That's from my perspective of the way that I feel like I can be most protective of, you know, my non-binary siblings, is to be able to like see folks. And I also though have to say to folks who are unsure, if you are not sure, ask someone's pronouns. What pronouns would you like for me to use? If that person gets offended because you asked that question, please do not take that personally. It is not about you. It is about that person's own story and about their relationship to pronouns. A vast majority of trans and gender nonconforming folks will be greatly appreciative that you even took the time to ask. It's hard to try something socially, like a new social norm, right? Like, I don't want to offend this person because what if like they're not trans or whatever?
Especially in Minnesota.
Right. Like, I really don't want to offend somebody. But ultimately, like you cannot take someone else's response personally, because it's again about that person's story and their own relationship to pronouns, and long before you ask that question. But ultimately, you know, taking a step back and looking at the big picture rather than looking at the forest rather than the trees individually, you know, it is a much better bet to just go ahead and ask.
The last person that was here, their name was Merritt, and Merritt just said, if I correct you, I'm not upset. Yeah. And the amount of work that it takes to then say, listen, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at you.
Yeah. Like, it's so much emotional labor to hold all of that.
So it's important for people to understand that mistakes will happen.
Yes.
And to move on, like to understand what it means to somebody and then move on.
I think that, you know, a word that comes to mind is compassion. And I think that there, just generally speaking, needs to be more compassion towards trans and gender nonconforming folks in these sort of emotional, laborious tasks that we're asked to do all of the time. Like, you know, so before I started taking testosterone and masculinized and used he, him pronouns, it was so emotionally exhausting for me to constantly correct people from saying she all the time and say he. And then, like, seriously, like 9 times out of 10, they would snap at me for correcting them. Huh. Like, why are you mad at me for correcting you when you messed up my pronouns? If you're offended because I'm telling you that I'm offended, then maybe you should pause, right? Like, about something with my identity. If you're feeling offended about my identity, then maybe it's a time to pause and reflect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't actually asked questions in regard to people who are just mean. Like, what you do in that situation.
Have compassion for yourself and walk away. I mean, like, our emotional energy is so precious, and like navigating, again, when you add the layers and the identities, you know, it's like, it's emotionally exhausting just surviving out in the world. But then to have people that we call colleagues and friends and, you know, people in our circles who, respond that way, that we have to hold all of that, like, that lowers our quality of life, mm-hmm. you know, like, that shortens our lives, mm-hmm. like, to hold all of that emotional burden. And so it's like, folks, please take some of that off of it and take emotional responsibility for yourself.
I guess that Merit did respond to that a bit, because what they said was, in those times, that's where they take time for themselves to say, yeah, I am stronger than this.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be validated by anybody else, you know?
Yeah, that was actually, honest to God, probably my biggest epiphany that I ever had. When I was, like, walking down the street, and I was feeling super anxious, like, socially anxious about the world around me and, like, how people were looking at me and, like, what the first pronoun that came, like, what gender that they saw. Like, I felt so anxious about it. And then it was just, like, this huge moment of, like, oh, wait, it actually doesn't matter what pronoun somebody uses, because I'm still me and they're just being a jerk. And that has nothing to do with me. So, you know, I talk about, you know, folks who are being corrected, taking emotional responsibility. What I hear you saying, Merit said, and kind of similar to my experience, was also taking emotional responsibility and taking care of myself. Like, the only thing that I can, this is what the epiphany was the only thing that I can really control is myself and my response. And every time that I responded from this place of stress and anxiety, it made me feel really sick. Like, it literally would make me feel sick. And so working through that to be able to try to release as much of the trigger and the charge of being misgendered took a lot of work.
You said you use he, him, his pronouns. Mm-hmm. Are there any instances where you currently use other pronouns?
I probably would from time to time. Like, I think about they, them from time to time, but certain spaces. But I don't typically, just because, again, I simplify my gender for mass consumption. So I tried to keep the pronouns consistent.
But you did say that there were times where you used other pronouns. Mm-hmm. Can you say again, like, what those were and any that you considered?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I was she, her, then then he, him, then they, them, she, her, and then he, him again. So
okay. There we are. I think you are only the second person in the project who currently does not use they, them pronouns.
Yeah.
I guess a good way to put it maybe is that you would never be offended if someone started with those pronouns.
Yeah. And I honestly probably would correct that person if good. They started yep. with they, them, because again, just for consistency, people
yeah.
like,
yeah, yeah.
I actually had somebody ask me the night of the project how I felt about the fact that I have chosen to simplify my gender identity. Like, you know, do you feel really mad about it? And it's like, I am still my full and authentic self. It's just uh-huh. simplified. And I also have deliberately made this choice. Like, to be somebody stepping into new spaces, that's just not a part of the path for me at this point uh-huh. in society. So, yes.
Well, and I have questions a little bit about your work. Are you saying that is one of the reasons or most of the reason that you do simplify it?
I would say that that's in large part. And also, though, like my gender, what I like to say is my gender is complicated,
yeah.
is how I feel about yep. it. And so it's more complicated, but I'm okay with navigating the world as a Black queer trans man. Like, that is A-okay. I feel good about that too.
And I think you've kind of said this as well, but I always like to have the questions with the answers. So mm-hmm. away from pronouns, how do you define and describe yourself and your gender?
Yeah, so if you catch me on most days, I'm a Black queer trans man. On some days, depending on who I'm talking to and they understand, then I identify myself as a Black queer transmasculine gender nonconforming femme.
All right, and I want to go through it. In my own head, I want to go through all of that to make sure.
Yes. So
a gender nonconforming femme man. Is that what you said? Nope. Femme?
Yeah, just femme.
Okay.
So Black and queer, trans masculine. So identifying center of masculine on the gender spectrum. And then gender nonconforming femme, because I identify very strongly with my femme identity. But obviously, like, I don't fit into femme, like the constructs of what a femme is. And so, but my femme identity is very like central to my identity overall. But, you know, when I simplify it, it's like, I feel like that's kind of tucked into the queer piece, you know, like uh-huh. I still feel my full and authentic self, regardless of what labels. It's just one is semi easier for people to understand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, I always try to kind of step back from where what I've learned from the project.
Yeah.
I always try to step back so that people who might be just starting in their education of it all, that they can understand each piece of this.
Yeah.
So tell me more about you. Where are you from originally and what brought you to Minnesota?
Yeah, so I'm originally from the cornfields of Illinois. I was raised in a small town and first generation college student. I bounced around a little bit. When I graduated from high school, I, like a good Midwestern queer, like ran as fast as I could to the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I went to school out there for a little bit at a women's college, Mills College. And then from there, that was during the Great Recession. So I was like, oh, this is a terrible time to be in the Bay Area. So then in 2009, I think, I moved to Chicago, where I was able to finally finish college. My degree is in Chinese.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then I went on to be a special ed teacher in Chicago public schools. I got into a post-bac program to be a special ed teacher. And long story short, the classroom, you know, I just saw so much injustice in the classroom and how it fit into a larger system. I got burnt out on Chicago. It never really felt like home. And so I was ready to leave the classroom and Chicago. And so I put an ask out there to the Facebook world. I was like, so I'm thinking about maybe moving back to Oakland or maybe moving to Portland or Nashville, because I've been to those two cities and liked them well enough. And one person said I should check out Minneapolis. And I was like, why Minneapolis? Snobby, larger city, Midwestern city. And I was like, why would I move there? And she said that this was the place that she felt safest as a Black queer woman. And that really, really spoke to me, because I felt very unsafe in Chicago as a Black queer man.
Well, I'm not surprised, but I'm really happy to hear that definition of Minneapolis. And then, I mean, that's held true since you moved here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, I'm elected.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point.
Yes. Both Andrea and I are elected. Yep. So, you know, yep. I think that Minneapolis is quite a special city. And North Minneapolis in particular, if I may say
so. Yeah. So do you know how many years you've been using he, him, his pronouns?
Off and on for 8 years.
Okay.
My anniversary is coming up. Okay. On June 30th, my first tee shot 8 years ago. What's happened since then?
That's another term I have not heard. I
always am like,
yeah.
Yes.
Can you tell me more about your journey to using he, him, his pronouns or all the pronouns along the way? When was the first time that you started questioning your gender?
Well, I think like a lot of other trans folks, you know, I kind of have that textbook like when I was a kid and, you know, little kid. And I remember very distinctly saying that I wanted to grow up and be a boy and that I wanted to have a big muscly body like my dad. And, you know, and my mom said, you know, well, honey, it doesn't really work like that. And I said, okay. And essentially that was basically the end of that conversation for about 20 years. Because I was a good kid and was like, okay, well, things don't work that way. Got it. and then just never fully thought about it again, because sexual orientation and gender identity are complicated. Especially when those two things can overlap in way unexpected ways, at least from my part of the journey. It was kind of like, oh, but it was appealing, the onion process. But truly though, it was like a light bulb moment. I was in a gay American history class at DePaul University, and to fulfill the requirement. And so I took a gay American history class. We broke it down per topic and unit, and I took gay transgender people, because I thought that I was like, I know that gay trans people exist, but I kind of don't like get it. Uh-huh. And like would like to be able to better understand this demographic of folks. So then I read the story of Lou Sullivan, a trans man in San Francisco in the 80s and 90s during the AIDS epidemic, who was an activist. He ended up dying during the AIDS epidemic. But you know, so I read his story. I like closed the book. I pushed the book away and I was like, Oh my God, I'm a gay man. Like, it was like this like light bulb turned on. And then it was like less than 2 weeks later, I came out. It was pretty quick. Like, it was like once that light bulb turned on, like there was no turning it back off. And so it happened very quickly.
It was at the beginning of the project where I was talking to someone who is part of the project. And I was still trying to connect to that feeling of coming out for first being trans.
Yeah.
And with this person, and this was off camera, I was saying, well, part of my story for the start of this project was because my process of coming out as bisexual was very complicating, because nobody could accept that. Okay. Brent is gay because he's dating guys. Yeah. Forget about the woman that he dated.
Right.
That he had a long relationship with.
Yeah, he's gay.
And now being in a being married to a man, now I'm in a gay marriage.
Yeah.
And I was saying all of these things. I'm saying, but I can understand that bit of struggle that I had coming out with my sexuality. And then the person from the project was like, you realize I'm a gay man.
Right.
Right? And I was like, oh my gosh, I do still have a lot to like really catch on to with all of this.
Yeah. And I think it's also honestly really important to name that gay men were horrible to me when I first transitioned, and probably for like the first 3 years, until it was like basically until I could grow a beard regularly, they mm-hmm. were horrible to mm-hmm. me. And I shouldn't need to have a beard before people started to respect me and respect my gender identity. And so I mean, there's, I think that there's a lot of work to be done within the gay community in general. Because like I said, like God, gay men were so horrible to me when I first came out. Things have changed since then. That was in 2010, which is so weird because it's not even 10 years ago. But like, oh my God, so much has changed since 2010. Mm-hmm. Like, I think gay men probably overall have a greater awareness of trans men and gay trans men. But it was challenging to come out and also to come out as a feminine man. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like that's really what people struggled the most with was, you know, and when I first came out, I was very like, I am a gay man. Like there was no like real femme or gender nonconformity, but that was because, you know, I felt very, at that time, I just felt very connected to that identity. But as time went on and I felt more comfortable and settled into myself and my experience, that was when I started to like allow myself to explore the spectrum again and kind of be like, yeah, actually, I feel more comfortable in this space than this space.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think it's important to tell people listening who aren't part of the queer community that there's struggle even within it.
Oh,
and for them to understand that, like, it doesn't just happen from cis people.
Yeah.
It's there's a lot of struggle with it all.
Yeah. And also, within the community, there's challenges with gender, but also race. Like, transitioning into being a Black man in the gay community was, like, even worse. So, there's that too.
So, I choose to ask people or to talk about birth names. And I do that just so that everyone can understand what that name represents to people who are trans or non-binary and the fact that they have changed their name.
Mm-hmm.
And with that question, you're welcome to share whatever you want, but I'm not asking anyone to share their birth name. Mm-hmm. I like to say that first and foremost. Have you always gone by Philippe?
No, I have not.
How long have you been using Philippe?
So, I've been going by Philippe since 2007, so 3 years before I transitioned. And prior to transition, I was actually a fairly feminine woman. So I was a feminine woman who went by Philippe. And I conscientiously made that decision because I was at Mills College and I was like, screw gender conformity. I'm going to pick a name that I want and make a fresh start for myself. I'm letting go of my birth name because that for me held on, like that represented a lot of agreements that I had made in my life that I did not actually agree to. You know what I mean? Like just things that like stories that were put onto me and then, you know, in the trauma and whatnot that I had experienced in my life prior to that. And so I decided at 20 that I was going to start going by Philippe. And actually that comes from when I was a kid. Like I said, I was like a little boy until I was about like 6. I mean, honestly, even beyond that, but we'll leave that alone. But my dad and my brothers called me Felipe. Because it's similar to my birth name. And because they're like, we're not going to call you that. You're like a little boy. We're going to call you Felipe. And so, but when I went to change my name, I knew a Felipe. And so every time I said that name, it made me think of him. And so I was like, I'm going to go with Felipe. I'm going to make it my own. And now everybody calls me Felipe anyway. So maybe I should have just not put that in the first place. But anyway, so here we are. Felipe it is.
Are there people in your life who still refer to you by your birth name?
My grandma.
So again, I asked that question just to then give you space to say what that means if someone does that.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely am not cool with it if if you ain't my grandma. I will say that with grandma, it's kind of like, you know, grandma's grandma. And my grandmother raised five girls by herself in extreme poverty. I exist because she managed to survive through all of what she's been through. At this point, I'll let the woman have it.
Yeah.
I'll let her have
it. Happy Mother's Day.
It's complicated. Yeah. And she can have it. And I accept that from a place of compassion.
So we'll go back to gender. Can you give an example of a time when someone challenged your gender and how it made you feel?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, like, the first thing that came to mind is when I had, like, a small group of trans women gang up on me and tell me that I wasn't actually trans because I dated men. That was particularly challenging because I transitioned in when I lived in, well, I didn't necessarily always live there, but when I worked in Boys Town, I worked in nightlife. It was particularly heartbreaking because I pretty much kind of like transitioned in like the drag scene. And these trans women were a part of the drag scene. And so it was the beginning of recognizing how much animosity there was towards me as somebody who didn't quite fit into the sort of traditional understanding of transgender and what that means. Like, I didn't transition into like some beefcake straight dude. And so they're like, no, you're not actually trans. Like, it was very, like, their thinking was very binary. And so that was very heartbreaking for me.
Can you give an example of a time when someone validated your gender and how it made you feel?
My mom had a really hard time with my transition. Very, very hard time. When it came for me, time for me to get top surgery, I was going to fly to Florida because that's where a well-known surgeon is. So I was going down there, and the folks who were going to help me, like my dad was originally going to go and help, and then like somebody else was going to originally go and help me after surgery. But it all fell through. And so my mom was like, of course I'm going to go. Like, I'm not going to like let you go down there and hope for the best with strangers. And then we were on the plane there, and I think she was kind of like having her come to Jesus moment of like, okay, like this is for real. And she was just like, you know, now I look back at you as a child, and, you know, I'm like, he really liked RuPaul, and like, he really liked boas and was really feminine. And she's like, and, you know, I thought I had a daughter, but now I realize that I had a gay son this whole time. And like, that was a really, really big deal, because after that, like, she was just like, she stuck by me like ever since then. She defends, you know, people misgender me still in my hometown or things like that. My mom is like the first to correct them. So, yay.
I appreciate that story. Thanks for telling that.
Of course.
Yeah. If someone's having a hard time remembering, understanding, or respecting another person's pronouns, their name, their gender, what suggestions do you have for the person who wants to be able to do this and is willing to put in the work?
Genuinely apologize when you mess up, and don't take it personally if somebody snaps at you. Like, again, it is gender, like gender pronouns and birth names carry so much charge, so much history, so much baggage and trauma, that folks cannot take it personally if somebody gets upset with them for messing up. Still apologize genuinely. Please take on the emotional labor, you know, of like, oh, you just charged me and I'm having big feelings about that. It's like, well, let me hold that, and I apologize. I recognize that I messed up or whatever, and I promise I'll do better moving forward. I would say maybe like practice saying they, them. Because think about it. If there was somebody knocking on the door, delivering a pizza and you didn't know who they were, you would probably say they're at the door because you're not sure if that person is a man or a woman or uses he or she. So people more than likely will say they're at the door, right? And so it's like, just keep practicing, realizing that actually they is used singularly quite frequently, actually. And so just, and also, please don't, please don't make your automatic response with like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm old school, or oh, sorry, I'm traditional, or oh, you know, it's like this excuse of like, oh, I'm just too old for this. Like, that is very annoying.
The way that I have put it is, if you feel that that is an excuse, what you're actually saying is you're not going to respect somebody.
Yeah,
like, you might as well just say, I don't respect you, and I'm not going to respect you.
Yeah.
And a lot of, especially Minnesotans, don't want that type of feeling.
Right.
So you have to put the work into it.
Right. Totally.
All right. So I had asked some people from the project if they would have questions for you. And the person that responded was EJ. And they said that they saw you recently. And so this question's from EJ.
Cool. I love EJ.
What do trans and gender expansive Minnesotans need?
I would say that we need, on the high level, dignity, respect, opportunity. I would say that on a more granular level, that we need access to housing, employment, healthcare, transportation, healthy living, affordable living. The research is pretty clear that actually trans folks tend to be much more educated than the general population, but have much higher rates of unemployment. Even in Minnesota, on average, trans folks experience unemployment rates, I think, at 3 times the rate of the general population. And so it's like, we need jobs. I mean, all the trans folks that I know are like super brilliant. Like, I just can't, I don't get it. Like, give us opportunity. Allow for our perspective at the table, value our perspective. When I look at a problem, when I look down at an issue, I'm analyzing that issue from the perspective of 23 years of lived experience as a Black woman, and then the past 8 as a Black man. And so when I look and analyze through those, I can say that perspective has literally never been at the table as an elected office before, right? Like, that's literally never been at the table. Now imagine that in healthcare, imagine that in education, imagine that in policing, and, you know, all the fields, the private sector, the nonprofit sector. Trans folks should not be limited to opportunity of serving other trans folks. We do obviously need to provide support to one another, but I think that we have lost generations already of leaders and opportunities, who we've lost generations of genius because they've had to fight for the most basic of rights and services, like sitting at a lunch counter. Like, imagine if all of that brilliance was able to be applied rather than like the basics of using the bathroom or eating at a lunch counter, thinking about poverty, mm-hmm. thinking about pollution, thinking about these big, big societal issues. We need jobs. We need opportunities too.
Parts of this project somewhat become selfish for me because things that I'm learning, one of which is the idea of privilege. Mm-hmm. I mean, my husband is Latino. I understand that perspective, but not personally. Mm-hmm. But I've learned so much about privilege, and ultimately, that's what you're talking about. These different levels. There's people in the project who explain that because they can pass mm-hmm. as a man, and because they are white, it gives them so much more privilege than previously. Mm-hmm. But I always like to actually just point out this idea of privilege so that people that are listening can, I mean, you kind of have to step back and understand exactly what that means to people.
Yeah. Well, if I can, real quick, I will say that, so I'm cis passing. People look at me and they just see a feminine gay black guy. Mm-hmm. And that definitely provides me with privilege as a trans person. It did, however, open up a new form of marginalization. Like being a feminine man, being perceived as a feminine man actually increased my danger in a different kind of way. Like, I learned how to survive in the world for 23 years as a black woman at the crossroads of misogyny and racism and the grossness that lives there. Like, I learned how to survive that. And then I plopped in my mid-20s into black masculine, like, being a black man. And I felt like privilege was gained in some ways, and then privilege was lost in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Folks feel a little bit braver to take their racism out on me, for example, because I'm a smaller, more feminine black guy. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that that make race, privilege, power, all of those things complicated. And definitely when we add trans identity to it or gender nonconforming.
I asked you to give insight on how people can better respect or remember someone's name and their pronouns, but what would you say to those who want to do more than that? If trans allies could do three things to help work towards trans liberation, what would they be?
So, one, be friends with trans people. Know trans people, get connected, but don't be a creep about it. Second, it's like, I'm trying to make some trans friends around here. No. But for real though, like, bring trans folks into your life. If you don't already have friends who are trans or gender nonconforming. So that's one. The second is wherever you are, particularly in your places of employment, review policies and procedures to be able to see what's trans exclusionary or non-binary exclusionary. So thinking about when you check a box that says female or male on a job application, that is a barrier, actually. And so it's like looking and analyzing those sort of things, looking for opportunities in particular for anti-bias hiring work, because research out in San Francisco found that 48% of employers openly discriminate against trans folks. They would rather hire a less qualified cis person than an overly qualified trans person. 48% in San Francisco.
Wow.
So hiring bias is deep. And so I would say that that's a big component of it, is helping folks work through anti-bias in their hiring practices within their jobs. And then again, wherever you are, like, being conscientious of, like, asking if there's a gender neutral restroom, because I can say, like, as a somebody who cis passes, I still don't feel safe in a lot of bathroom spaces, especially if I need to take a shower. And but yet I'll be like, you know, if I'm like at the gym or something, but I'll be looking to my left, looking to my right, and I'm like, the handicap space or, you know, whatever is constantly locked or whatever, you know. And so it's like, by having other folks, like, wherever they go, making sure that there is space that's safe for trans folks. And then I would say the third thing is donate to trans-led organizations. Please do that. Trans-led organizations are almost entirely volunteer-led and ran, because grants aren't made for us. So please donate.
Yeah. Well, one of the next questions I have was, are there websites, publications, organizations that you would suggest people donate to, or that they can go to educate themselves?
Yeah, well, I definitely would say for folks to check out supporting Minnesota Transgender Health Coalition under the great leadership of Roxanne Anderson, and Transforming Families, which is an organization that supports, I'm sure, you know, maybe most folks know, but they support families who have trans kids, and it makes my heart warm and fuzzy. But please support them. They're doing really amazing work. And I would say that it would be good. There's a Transgender Equity Council through the city of Minneapolis. And that group is going to be, so it's a council of appointed commissioners between city council appointed and mayoral appointed. I helped to create that position when I was in the mayor's office. I'm very excited about this work. It's near and dear to my heart, but it's an opportunity for folks to be able to plug in to subcommittees so that they're actually doing the work with trans folks and supporting the work, because that's going to be primarily led by trans folks, the work that comes out of that group, if not entirely. So,
Is there a website? Is there a Facebook page, Instagram for you? Where can people go to you to see more about you?
Me? Yeah. You can go to the City of Minneapolis website and go to the fourth ward page. You'll find out more information about me, what's going on in the ward, as well as we have a Facebook page. It's at CM Cunningham. I don't even know.
Fourth word. Just do a search.
Four? Yes. the official name is CM Philippe Cunningham, Minneapolis Ward 4.
Okay.
So that has constant updates. So yeah, it's a good way to be able to keep up with me.
All right, we're nearing the end here.
It's been such a good time.
What advice would you give to your younger self or to youth who might be questioning their gender identity?
I would say that you're not alone. The first thing is that you're not alone, even though everyone immediately around you might not either have your back, be down with it, you know, whatever the case may be, that you're still not alone, and that you're actually, and this is really in particular, like, just because other people can't see your magic doesn't mean it's not there. Just because people can't see how special you are doesn't mean that you're not special. It just means that they don't have the capacity to be able to see your magic or to see how special you are. So keep living in that and have compassion for yourself, for the feelings and emotions and struggle, but to have patience as you work through those challenges. So
I love that word magic.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like trans folks are magic and gender nonconforming folks are magic. I have experienced two lifetimes in one already, kind of three for a little bit if you get the more non-binary space. And so I've lived multiple lives in one. So
what advice do you have for parents who may have children who are questioning their gender identity?
Prepare for big emotions, because it's really confusing and it's definitely a process. Find other parents, find other people to be in conversation with. Take care of yourself, because it's kind of like that mask on the airplane. Like, you got to take care of yourself before you can take care of somebody else. And this can be really taxing and challenging. It's okay to mourn the loss of who you thought your child was without feeling guilty about that, as long as you keep moving through it. But again, going back to self, having some compassion for yourself, and not feeling guilty in the process, but being committed to being there. Both my mom and I, we talk from time to time. It's just like how heartbreaking it is for parents who disown their trans or queer kids. It's just like, that's not unconditional love. Mm-hmm. Why did you have a child if you're not actually going to love that child no matter what? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Well, again, there's just little pieces where it's like, oh, I haven't heard that yet. And it pushes perspective for me. And when you say the idea of mourning the loss, like, that really puts you into a place of like, And again, you said that that's acceptable as long as you're pushing through it for your kid.
Yeah.
But that idea, like that you're moving on to something else,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. My mom had to mourn the loss of her daughter and her identity of being the mother to a daughter. Like that was a huge part of her identity. And so, so I had to give her space and grace to be able to go through that process. She transitioned with me.
Uh-huh. Is there anything else you would like to say to anyone listening?
I would just say that gender is complicated and be committed to questioning your reality about everything that you know about gender. And move through that process. We don't have a mental model of what it means to be trans or gender nonconforming. We have a mental model for what it means to be gay. It's like, well, you just kind of like straight people, but you just switch out, right? It's like, but you don't really have anything like that for trans gender identities and gender nonconforming. And so to take the time to create a new mental model and understand or if you don't have the time and energy to do that, to radically accept that you do not have to get something to respect it. Uh-huh. and also, I think it's really important to continue to spread information and education. And so I would definitely say for folks to be intentional about sharing this particular episode, if they so feel that it has good information, the project in general, there is something really amazing in somebody taking the time to capture their learning process so that other folks can go through the learning process in a more structured, intentional way. And so, folks, please share this good stuff and make sure that folks are starting conversations and really investing in this project and the work that many of the participants are doing as well.
Thank you so much for being here,
Thank you so much for having me.
Did you know the best place to view the project is through the website, theythemproject.org? It's the only place you can see all the photos and videos and easily share the project to help it be seen and make a difference. In addition to the website, They Them Project is everywhere. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes and Google Play. Remember that the project grows and informs only when it is shared by people like you. Go to theythemproject.org and share what you see and hear.